Is the DIY music industry about to be hit by big changes following United Masters' huge new valuation? And what do Universal Music Group's latest financial results tell us about the company's commercial health? Welcome to Music Business Worldwide's Talking Trends, a podcast that goes behind the headlines to help you understand what's actually going on in today's music industry. Talking Trends is once again supported by Volley Music, a financial management platform for the music business. Volley allows you to easily manage budgets and forecasts, as well as tracking expenses, approving invoices, and making payments. For your free trial, head to volleymusic.com. That's V-O-L-Y music.com. As ever on Talking Trends, we'll be discussing two major recent headlines in the music industry. I'm Louise Porter, and with me is Tim Ingham, the founder of Music Business Worldwide. Our first story this week is about United Masters, the U.S.-based distribution platform that offers various career-boosting tools to independent artists. Last week, United Masters raised a bunch of money and consequently scored a company valuation of $550 million. Tim, why did that valuation jump out as something you'd like to discuss today?
Quite simply, because this is a really big story that's brewing now and building, and it's happening out of the glare of the major record companies and the public markets. So I think the seismic nature of the story and where it's headed is possibly getting kind of missed out there. The DIY music sector, that being the sector that offers, you know, distribution and tools to independent artists to get their music out, it's been talked about for a long time now as a kind of quiet giant of the music industry. And we've seen some useful stats on that come from Media Research, who I think the figure they put out in 2020 was that the DIY artists uploading their music via DistroKid, who we've mentioned, United Masters and TuneCore and SoundCloud, those artists generated $1.2 billion in royalty payouts from digital services across 2020, $1.2 billion. And that was up by around a third year on year, partly thanks to sort of explosion in music making by independent artists during the pandemic. Now, according to those media stats, that $1.2 billion that these DIY self-uploading artists generated in 2020, that was worth a total global market share of 5.1%. In terms of the total money that the global recorded music industry turned over last year. Now, I know market share is a bit boring and overly businessy, you know, inside baseball, but 5.1%, simple way of putting that, is a 20th of all the money generated by any music, any recorded music across the world last year. A 20th of it was generated by DIY artists using services like DistroKid and United Masters. And the really interesting part of it, according to these stats, is that the DIY sector of the market is actually growing faster on a percentage basis, is growing faster than the major record companies, who are obviously the dominant player in global recorded music. Right. So fast forward to now, and a couple of things are indicating that this DIY sector, this $1.2 billion DIY sector last year, and particularly companies like United Masters and DistroKid, is about to become the music industry's next big financial story. And ultimately, that's because, as MBW kind of never stops reporting at the minute, investment capital, big, heavy investment capital, is being flung left, right, and center at music rights, as you're listening to this. And there's going to become a point of saturation in that market. You know, as we see Blackstone and KKR, and I'm sure other giant investment players getting serious about music rights, it's going to start to make sense for other, perhaps alternative investment houses to start wondering, you know, how else can we participate in the music industry, invest in the music industry in this massive growth curve that streaming and fitness apps and gaming and all this is driving, this massive growth curve we're seeing. But how can we participate in that without doing battle with Blackstone and KKR and others for music rights themselves, you know, proven gold standard blockbuster music rights? And it's this lens through which I think we should start looking at the DIY sector and sort of service companies offering tools to indie artists online. So United Masters has just raised $50 million. That was a figure it raised last week from Andreessen Horowitz, I believe. And it achieved a valuation of, as you mentioned, Louise, $550 million off that $50 million raise. Now that raise, that $50 million raise, that $550 million valuation for United Masters came a couple of months after one of United Masters' big rivals, DistroKid, was itself valued at $1.3 billion following some undisclosed investment, I believe, from Insight Partners, who've previously invested in Twitter. So United Masters is worth $550 million, DistroKid worth $1.3 billion. That's kind of reflective, I guess, of their global market share in this industry. Now, DistroKid's $1.3 billion valuation shocked a few people in the music industry. It's a huge number that sort of came out of nowhere, came out of left field. But just check this out, because we've been given a little extra insight into the growth of this DIY world and DistroKid particularly over the past few weeks, because Spotify revealed in a filing that this minority stake it owned in DistroKid, which I won't get into because it gets a bit complicated. The important thing is Spotify sold a chunk, 2/3 of the minority stake it owned in DistroKid. And in doing so, Spotify revealed in filings the value of that stake, not only the value of that stake now, which I'll come on to, but also the value of that stake over the past sort of 18 months or 18 months plus. And what Spotify's filing reveals is that its stake in DistroKid was worth 16 million euros in January last year. It was then worth, according to the filing, 49 million euros in January this year. So 16 million to 49 million. That is more than double, nearly treble in value, right? In a year, DistroKid, and reflective of the DIY sector. But by the time Spotify sold its stake in September this year, you know, the other month, that stake was worth 205 million euros. The massive growth in that stake is partly because of the investment that DistroKid took on. But let's not lose sight of the fact that Spotify's stake in DistroKid was worth 16 million euros in January last year, and it was worth 205 million euros, you know, September, the other month. That is more than 10 times growth, 16 to 205 million in the value of DistroKid. DistroKid is worth, according to the Spotify filing, over 10 times what it was in January last year. And that kind of value growth indicates to me that this is a sector that is about to see some massive M&A activity, mergers and acquisitions. It's going to see some real activity and it's going to get sort of very exciting for those covering the business. You know, there's going to be some big, big numbers, even bigger than we've seen thrown around. I'm sure of it.
How do you expect the DIY music industry to evolve now that we're seeing these huge dollar signs hanging over United Masters, DistroKid, and elsewhere?
I don't see how there's not going to be a sort of cataclysmic financial event in the DIY artist sector, because these valuations are just booming. Look, if I was United Masters, if I was Steve Stout, who's run United Masters from the start and has already raised investment capital from Google and Apple and others and has that in the bank, I'd definitely be considering a sale, whether of the whole of United Masters or part of United Masters. I'll talk to various potential acquirers in the space, the major record companies being obvious candidates. But if I was Steve Stout, and I'm not, I also might have an eye on an IPO, taking the company public and crystallizing the valuation that it's currently at, allowing the company and its investors to capitalize on the valuations that are currently being achieved. And also to benefit from the slipstream, if you like, of Universal Music Group and Warner Music Group trading on public markets and achieving huge valuations themselves. So, you know, what the narrative there for United Masters, I believe, is an easy, an obvious one. We are a major player in this DIY space that benefits from the overall value of music's growth every day. You know, we're 5% market share and growing is, you know, the value of that sector of the market is growing in accordance with the entire industry. The other part of the narrative they can, you know, spin is DIY is statistically faster growing as a sector than the majors, as I've mentioned. And the other part of it is, you know, the DIY industry is actually an active threat to Warner and Universal. So if you wanted to sell the sort of alternative investment, bring your money over here rather than putting it into Universal or Warner, that would be a good line, right? I'm pretty sure it's in the risk factors. I haven't looked, but I'm pretty sure it would be in the risk factors for Universal and Warner. You know, the fact that artists can effectively upload and distribute their music themselves. We can argue all day on how successful a strategy that is. But the fact of the matter is it's a threat profile against Universal and Warner, and that might be attractive to investors who may or may not be bearish on those stocks. But the wider point I'm making really is that DistroKid's valuation, that $1.3 billion valuation, followed by United Masters' valuation, the $550 million valuation, has suddenly made this sector very clearly and obviously worth multiple billions of dollars. And I fully expect that someone, don't know where it'll be it, you know, Steve Stout, United Masters, maybe it'll be a DistroKid, or maybe, you know, it will be TuneCore, or maybe it'll be someone else, CD Baby. I fully expect someone to be cashing in a big way on this market, because there's just so much heat around it as we speak.
Our second story this week concerns Universal Music Group, which announced its first quarterly financial results as a public company last week. Tim, what did you make of the numbers?
Well, it was mainly exactly what we've come to expect from Universal Music Group this year, which is strong double-digit growth across the company. At constant currency, I believe its revenue was up in the third quarter, year on year, up in the third quarter by about 17%, 17.5%, 17.4% around that. And Universal's recorded music streaming revenues, which is obviously the biggest part of its business and typically the fastest growing part of its business, just the streaming revenues in recorded music, they were up 15.2%. I've got down here at constant currency, year on year. Now, always interesting to compare and contrast to what other people were doing. Sony Music had a slightly better quarter in terms of percentage terms. So Sony's recorded music streaming revenues, if you're still following me, were up 33% year on year at constant currency. Universal's, as I mentioned, up 15.2%. However, Universal is growing off a bigger base. It's a bigger company. And when you work it all out, and I've just done some rough maths on the back of a piece of paper here, it looks like Sony's quarterly streaming revenues were up by about between 250 and 260 million US dollars in the quarter versus the same period of the prior year. As I say, about $250 million. And Universal's was up about 340 million US dollars. So if you're keen to spin it that Sony had the better quarter, you focus on the percentage growth. And if you want, spin it that Universal had the better quarter, you focus on the actual monetary growth. But they're both, going great guns effectively. What particularly jumped out at me from Universal's quarter, more than any of the numbers actually, was Sir Lucian Grainge's address to analysts and investors on the earnings call. And I think we're going to play a little bit of that now. And then I just want, it's worth listening out for a line that Lucian actually said a couple of times on the call regarding Universal's, quote, long-term career-oriented vision for artists. Long-term career-oriented vision. So we'll just play that bit now.
We remain the destination of choice for those artists seeking a partner that both shares a long-term career-oriented vision and has an unmatched track record to prove it. We are uniquely positioned to drive the greatest value based on our global resources and marketing experience. That simply is why the world's greatest artists at every stage in their career continue to sign, renew, and expand their partnerships with UMG.
So the overarching message there for me was twofold. Number one, Universal's going to keep making A&R and keep making long-term artist relationships the focus of its investments. It's kind of pre-warning, if you like, its investors, that's where a lot of the capital is going to be spent. But number two, Lucian Grainge is making the point, if you are thinking of investing in a public music company today, Universal is your best bet. That was basically his argument, because it has bigger reach and more relationships with superstar artists than any other company in the industry. Now, that's a convincing argument. It's not untrue. But the other side of all of this is Universal's own ambitious, very ambitious profit target. So it's currently telling investors that it wants to achieve a 25% annual EBITDA margin by the mid-2020s, which in normal speak, Universal basically wants to bank a quarter of its revenues as profit at the end of each year, a full quarter it wants to retain as profit. It's already on course to post around $2 billion, according to MBW's analysis, in EBITDA profit for this year alone. $2 billion in EBITDA profit this year alone. So Universal and Lucian Grange have to balance these two narratives, these two stories. So, you know, narrative number one, the fact it's telling investors to prepare for Universal investing really heavily in artists and A&R and long-term relationships with artists, but also telling those investors, don't worry, you're going to see fat profits. So it's the age-old business dilemma, if you like, of what to save and what to spend. That balance is going to become particularly pronounced, I think, when we're talking about the expiration of copyrights, when copyrights begin to revert back to artists and songwriters, as they are doing with increased frequency out there, as time ticks on. When those rights revert to artists, be they recorded or publishing rights, is Universal willing to spend the money required to either acquire or reacquire those rights from the artist, performer, songwriter in question, or even just pay a big advance to have a licensing or distribution relationship with artists like we've seen it do with Aerosmith just the other month? As we've covered a number of times on MBW, there are big moneyed investment houses willing to spend billions now. I've mentioned a couple of them, KKR, Blackstone, willing to spend billions on these assets and rival Universal, you know, start bidding wars with the likes of Universal for these rights and assets. Universal famously planted a flag in the ground on this topic with the acquisition of the Bob Dylan catalogue for around $400 million last year, between $350 and $400 million, we're led to believe. So, one story that stood out in amongst all of this narrative this week is Billboard reported that its sources are saying Bruce Springsteen is in negotiations with Sony over the potential sale of his masters and publishing catalogue to Sony, back to Sony, if you like, because it's been his long-term record label for decades. And that deal is apparently going to cost Sony multiple hundreds of millions of dollars, multiple hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. There's only so many of that size of deal that even Sony could afford an investor. There's going to be a finite number in a given year. You know, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. You can't be doing those deals every day. You can't be acquiring and reacquiring catalogs for those price tags too often. So when Universal is so keenly watching its profits on behalf of its investors, investors, by the way, who I have been promised by Universal a dividend of 50% of net profits recently. So those investors are also definitely keenly watching that profit margin. The big question is, will Universal basically burn its cash pile to compete on big acquisition and artist retention deals? And if so, to maintain this long-term career-oriented vision of working with artists for their whole careers, which of these deals is Universal going to pick? Which of these nine-figure, hundreds of millions of dollar deals is Universal going to pick and spend the money on? And what impact might that have on Universal's retained margin at the end of each year and the margin it's promising its investors? That's a big question to watch, a big balance for Lucian Grange to get right, and it's something MBW will be monitoring closely.
Music Business Worldwide's Talking Trends will be back next week with more insight into today's global music industry. If you like this episode, subscribe to Talking Trends by searching for Music Business Worldwide on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. We appreciate you spending time with us.